This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas, powered by U Mobile.
Good morning, you're listening to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar. While there is widespread acceptance that environment, social and governance principles, or ESG, are crucial for business continuity and success, what this looks like in practice for companies across different industries is an ongoing debate. So what are the trends driving ESG action in the economy today, and how should businesses position themselves for future resilience? Joining me to discuss this is Andrea Bonin-Blanc, CEO and founder of GEC Risk Advisory. She's also the author of Gloom to Boom, How Leaders Transform Risk to Resilience. Andrea, welcome to The Breakfast Grill.
Thank you so much for having me, Shazana.
Now, I would like to start with maybe reflecting on the experience that we've gone through for the past 2 years during the COVID-19 pandemic. From your observation, how has our pandemic experience shaped corporate attitudes towards ESG? I think it's fairly obvious that the pandemic has created more awareness of the ESG movement and the importance of incorporating ESG in business strategies. But how do you see this being manifested within the business community?
So I think it's a very multifaceted situation. But when the COVID pandemic started, I was concerned that the momentum that ESG had had before that with corporations around the world and others, with stakeholders and others, that it was going to come to an abrupt halt with COVID. But I think the opposite has happened. It's underscored, it's underlined so many issues that we have that are interconnected with the pandemic. The pandemic was clearly, you know, a biological, environmental, but then it also has all these social ramifications. It has governance ramifications, and it also has technology ramifications. So there's a whole set of issues that are interconnected. There are issues, there are risks, there are opportunities. And COVID, I think, has served to really underscore how important it is that businesses, as well as governments and social organizations, incorporate that kind of thinking, you know, that is tailored to their footprint, into their business strategy, into their governance.
Is it accurate to think that the businesses that have better survived this pandemic were the ones that were already plugged into ESG?
I absolutely believe that. I've written about that. I've spoken about it. And there's others smarter than I who have actually done some research into this. For example, McKinsey has published a number of articles recently that show that companies that were prepared for crisis, whatever the crisis is, but had better risk management processes, had better crisis management teams and protocols and scenario planning, those companies have fared better, much better over time than companies that are not prepared. And they've looked at, you know, publicly traded companies, how they did through the financial downturn of the 2008-2009 period. But they've also looked at some of this recent turmoil that's come about because of COVID. And it's the companies that were prepared and had those internal resilience mechanisms already in place, a leadership that was plugged into the issues, that had the crisis management teams, that had the enterprise risk management in place. Those teams, those companies were able to not only manage the issues at hand, but they also served their stakeholders better, and then they preserved their value better. Everybody suffered from COVID one way or another. But the ones that were prepared have not only survived, they've actually done better in the longer term. So I'm a big proponent of preparation in these areas in order to survive the next series of crises that we're going to have, and also to thrive and to create and protect the value that you have.
So for me, what makes ESG so complex is that it looks different for each company and sector. The ESG footprint for a palm oil company is going to be very different from the ESG footprint of a computer software firm. And there might also be variations depending on where they're based, which region they're in, what regulatory standards they have to abide by. So does this make it more difficult for businesses to navigate ESG issues? And how should they address this then?
I think you just hit it on the nail, Shazana, because each company has its own footprint, its own employee population, its geographical dispersion, its supply chain, its products and services. You just mentioned computer services versus palm oil. These are very different kinds of businesses, but every business has environmental issues, social issues, governance issues, and I like to tack on the idea of technological issues to incorporate in this thinking, because the way that they operate in their marketplaces with their stakeholders beyond shareholders, employees, customers, and others is going to be determined with how by how they deal with these kinds of issues, how they manage their environmental footprint. If they're a palm oil company, they're going to have a different environmental footprint than the software company. But both of them have environmental issues, environmental risks, and environmental opportunities. And the marketplace is going to judge them based on their footprint. So yes, it makes it more complicated and more customized, but I'm a big proponent of companies and their leadership thinking about what is my footprint? What is our footprint? And then take it from there rather than saying there are all these issues out there and how are we going to manage this and sort of throw your arms up in the air and give up. Because I think the marketplace and the future needs of this earth are going to require companies to do more in this regard. And their stakeholders are going to demand it, whether it's the younger employees that will not work for a company that has a bad environmental record versus, you know, customers who want to have greener products, et cetera, et cetera.
So do you see differences, I suppose, in terms of ESG adoption across the different economic sectors? Where do you think more advancement is being made in ESG? And conversely, which sectors or which companies or which industries do you think are falling behind on this and could stand to lose out if they don't catch up?
It's a really interesting question. You know, in some ways, the big tech companies are further ahead than, say, mid-sized companies and companies in other sectors. And part of it is because they have a lot of money and they can spend money on environmental, you know, stewardship and that sort of thing. On the other hand, I think that the heavy industry companies, the resource companies, they're the ones that have the most effects on at least the environmental issues and sometimes the social issues as well. And they're sometimes behind. And I think it really goes back to who are your leaders and what are they thinking? Do you have a sort of a forward-thinking, modern leadership team in the C-suite and the executive management and on the board? And I'm very, very importantly, I think, have to underscore the role of the board. But do you have the right people in those roles who are thinking about these things? Because if they're not thinking about these things, they're not future-proofing. Mm. And if they're not future-proofing, they're going to be at a competitive disadvantage. So I think every kind of company, whether you're small, medium, or large, or whether you're in you know, software, in AI, or in oil and gas production, you need to think about these things from a future-proofing standpoint.
So you mentioned that leadership is so important in charting that path towards ESG. Where do you think the biggest push for ESG adoption is coming from? Who are these leaders responding to? Which stakeholders, I suppose, have their attention in this, you know? And conversely, who is the Debbie Downer in the room? Is there any one group or stakeholder that you see that's most reluctant to embrace ESG?
Well, you know, I'll start with the last. I think sometimes it's the shareholder, you know, the shareholder whose position as king or queen of the stakeholders is maybe being threatened a little bit by this ESG world. And so you sometimes, especially in the more traditional industries, the less sort of high tech industries, you will have more of this old fashioned way of looking at it. The fiduciary responsibility is to make the most profits for the shareholder. And if the stakeholders, you know, also benefit, well, great. But I don't think that model is going to survive our times. And I think these major changes, transformational things that are happening in the world today, which I address in my megatrends analysis, which we'll talk about shortly. These megatrends, these major transformational things that are happening in the global marketplace, whether they're geopolitical or climate related or social, those things are pushing stakeholders to be much more vociferous. So I think the ones that are pushing hardest perhaps are the employees and the young people who are coming into the workforce. It's a generational shift. And some of us who are older, you know, may feel more kinship with some of the younger people who are coming into these companies because our way of looking at this is similar to theirs. But I think it's a generational based thing. Especially in the richer economies, let's say, where there's choice, perhaps, where you can walk across the street figuratively and go to another company that cares more about certain things that you care about. And so I think employees and then customers also. And I'll also mention regulators and, you know, the government, because more and more, certainly starting in Europe with the EU, but now in the US, we're seeing it. We're seeing it in Asian marketplace, and we're also seeing it in Latin America. There are more and more people thinking about these issues from a regulatory standpoint. And so we also have these non-governmental associations, plus, you know, the UN Global Compact and the UN generally, and other international organizations that are pushing hard for this kind of thinking as well.
I like that you said generational. And I think the more that we see leaders from the younger generation come up the ranks, I suppose we'll see even greater advancements when it comes to ESG. I'm speaking to Andrea Bonin-Blanc, CEO and founder of the GEC Risk Advisory. We'll have more from this conversation after a quick break. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U-Mobile.
Thanks for staying tuned to The Breakfast Grill. I'm Shazana Mokhtar, and today I'm speaking to Andrea Bonin-Blanc, CEO and founder of the GEC Risk Advisory. She's also the author of the book Gloom to Boom: How Leaders Transform Risk to Resilience. I want to talk about technology, and you're one of the earliest proponents of adding that additional letter to ESG, T for technology. You wrote about this in your book. Why does technology warrant a standalone focus in the ESG sphere?
Yeah, you know, I'm now subject to slings and arrows because there are people that are saying ESG is good, others are saying ESG is bad, and then other people are saying, oh, we can't add more letters to this. Where I'm coming from is, and when I wrote the book was back in 2018, 2019, the book was out in 2020. The reason I devoted chapters to environmental, to social, to governance, and then to technology is because I've also been very involved with looking at AI ethics and cybersecurity issues. And these issues suffuse every single business, whether they want to recognize it or not. And so those are just two of the technology issues. There's a ton of others. If you're in biotech, or if you're in nanotech or some other, you're using all kinds of new technologies that haven't been necessarily tested completely, that have all kinds of potential privacy and security issues. So my purpose for distinguishing the T is really more to bring awareness to technology issues having to be part of this portfolio approach to an ESG plus T strategy within an organization.
To what extent are technology issues already incorporated into the ESG space? You know, how are businesses addressing technology risks that they are aware of? I mean, cybersecurity, you mentioned it, is one of those things that has really come to the forefront of late. Is this widely accepted in the field at the moment?
Well, you know, I agree. Cybersecurity is probably the leading or bleeding edge of these tech issues because everybody has been cyber attacked one way or another. So businesses are finally, more prepared, or at least trying to be more prepared to deal with these kinds of issues. What I would say is that the technology space generally has so much innovation going on. And one of the big disconnects that happens within companies is that your engineers and your research and development people are busy inventing things, but you don't always bring in some of the other people who should be looking at those things, risk managers, ethicists, and others who can understand the implications of those products and services that you're creating. So while it's really exciting and wonderful that we have all this innovation and we have amazing things being created, like the vaccines during COVID, for example, and that was international collaboration, that was very fast-tracked, we still need to have some of the governance, some of the risk management, some of the ethicists kind of looking at these things so we don't have aberrations created. through flawed facial recognition technology, for example, or biometrics. And so I think it's super important whether you add a T or you incorporate it under one of the E, S, or G. I don't really care. I think it's really more about building awareness and incorporating it. So cyber often ends up in governance, privacy issues, and data protection ends up under S, the social issues. It's an imperfect nomenclature. It's an imperfect way, but it's been adopted by the financial community and the investor community. So we're stuck with maybe not the greatest nomenclature to describe these issues, but I like to think of them as intangible risks and intangible opportunities that go beyond sort of the brick and mortar things that most companies have.
I'm really struck by what you said about innovations. Everyone's so excited about a new innovation that you don't really think about the implications that could come after. And, you know, I'm thinking of issues like disinformation, for example. No one was really thinking about this 10, 15 years ago when Facebook first exploded onto the scene, but it's become such a big part of our lives now and such a big problem. So how do we address this disconnect, like you said then? You know, is it down to the tech companies themselves that need to be aware that whatever new product they come up with, they need to have somebody to oversee this? You know, should governments have some kind of framework for this kind of technology? What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination, but it always goes back, in my opinion, to who are your founders, your leaders, the people who create these new companies and technologies, and do they care about risk management? Do they care about the ethical implications? Do they care about governance? And I want to just mention, and you know, people might not like this, but I'll mention the difference between Facebook and Microsoft, for example. Microsoft, in the last few years under their current CEO, has been very proactive about putting in AI ethics principles into the creation of their software and of their algorithms. Meanwhile, Facebook, you know, we just have to read the headlines every day, and there's always a new horror story. And back in 2016, there was the Cambridge Analytica issue where, you know, the privacy of everybody on Facebook was basically hijacked for political interference and misinformation, as you just said, disinformation. So, yeah, these are the unintended or maybe intended in some cases consequences of this technology that goes out into the wild and then becomes something that you didn't expect it to. And it becomes a very big governance or risk challenge. And that's where you need to get the regulators to come in. But regulators are always behind the technologists. They can't keep up with the technologists. So it's up to the companies to have these conscientious, responsible leaders who will not allow these things to go out into the wild without some form of guardrail in place.
So I'd like to take a look at the megatrends. And you author a yearly report on megatrends that highlight five major themes that you see as the focus of the ESGT space. So let's talk about some of these trends in the remaining time that we have. The top trend for the year 2022-2023 is geopolitical tectonic shifts catalyzing. How do you see this manifesting in the ESGT space?
What I mean by megatrends is sort of multi-year trends, things that are happening over time, but they have very concrete impacts on our lives from year to year. And so what I'm trying to do with these megatrends is help leaders, whether they're business, government, society, doesn't matter, think about the context in which they are operating and they are working and what they need to think about. So the top one for this coming year is this idea of geopolitical tectonic shifts catalyzing. The mega trend is that there are geopolitical tectonic shifts taking place. This year, they got pushed really hard by the Russian invasion of Ukraine, and that kind of changed things and catalyzed things in a way that we hadn't seen for a while. We had seen the movement towards a degradation of NATO and the rise of China and a few other things. Now we have new life has been breathed into NATO because of this Russian invasion of Ukraine, two new member countries, et cetera, et cetera. So there are all these reverberations that have happened. And so the geopolitical tectonic shift catalyzing means that a lot of dramatic change has happened and is happening. And anyone who's doing business anywhere in the world, to be very frank, because supply chains go everywhere and that sort of thing, has to be cognizant about how it impacts their particular footprint, their particular strategy.
How do you think strategies would differ depending on where you're located. Yeah, if your company located in the U.S., it's your, I suppose, geopolitical calculations are going to differ than a company based in Malaysia, for example.
Yeah, and this is where I think it's really important for the leadership of each company, wherever they're located. And, you know, it could be a Malaysian company in terms of its headquarters, but it could have, you know, divisions in Latin America, in Africa, in the rest of Asia. And so that leadership has to think about, where are we located? Where are we receiving supply chain goods? Where are we sending our goods or services? And what is the political risk involved with us being in those places? What is the political risk within each of those countries? So one of the big mega trends that's part of this geopolitical shifts idea is that democracy has declined in the world over the last 10 to 15 years. It's been a very well documented by several different research organizations that rule of law and human rights have declined substantially, even in very well-established democracies like the United States. And so it presents a new political risk maybe that we didn't think about before, even for people doing business within the United States. I think it's really important wherever you're located to understand your home country really well, then the other countries that you are either present in or have an important supply chain, and then diversify and make that part of your strategy. But you have to inform yourself and be educated about these political risks, because it's no longer something that you can just say, oh, we don't have to worry about that. Mm-hmm. We have to worry about it.
Mm. I want to end on this point, Andrea. We're talking about how the ESG space is evolving. I think a lot of agreement on both parts here that ESG is something that is going to stay for the long term. But at the same time, of late, we are also seeing pushback against ESG. I think in the U.S., among Republican circles, there's a lot of anti-ESG talk, which I find quite surprising. What exactly is driving this pushback at this stage? And I guess, how virulent do you think it could get?
I'm both concerned and not concerned. I'm concerned because I think it should not become a political football, because these are not political issues. These are social issues. They're climate issues. They're good governance issues. They're safe tech issues. These are not issues that, that have one side or another. But unfortunately, short-term minded politicos are basically piling in on this idea of making it a polarization issue. I think it could get worse before it gets better, certainly in the United States. I don't see it happening in other parts of the world, which is very interesting, right? I think the overall arc is to continue working with these issues. All the regulators, the international organizations, even right now the U.S. under the current administration is moving in this. Everyone is moving in the direction of, we have to deal with these issues. We have to incorporate them into our business strategy, into our government policy, because these are existential issues for our populations, for our employees, etc. So I'm hoping that the polarization piece will eventually fritter away. I'm not bullish that it's going to disappear overnight. I think we have a political situation here in the United States that's very, it's kind of critical right now. We have democracy in the balance to a certain extent, in my opinion. And so it will continue to be that kind of a football here, but I don't see it being a football for anybody else. And I think anyone who's thinking clearly and rationally is going to say, this is something we need to do as a society, as a business, to make sure we protect people, protect value, and create new value. So that's my general take on it.
Andrea, thank you very much for speaking with me today.
Thank you so much, Shazana. It's been a real pleasure to speak with you.
I've been speaking to Andrea Bonin-Blanc, CEO and founder of the GEC Risk Advisory. This has been The Breakfast Grill on BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile, where unlimited potential begins.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.